Hello and welcome to Paranormal or What podcast with me, your host Michaela Ford. Hello paranormal peeps, how are we doing this week? I'm doing really well. I've literally just finished doing an interview with a very interesting man. His man is Ben Emlyn Jones. He is a conspiracy theorist and paranormal enthusiast who's written several books and has his own radio show, Hospital Porters Against the New World Order. Makes for very interesting listening. So, without further ado, let's go and see what Ben says. Hello and welcome to Paranormal or What podcast with me, your host Michaela Ford. And today we have a special guest, and that is Ben Emlyn Jones. And I will not give him any more introduction because he's going to tell us all about himself, which I'm fascinated about. Hello, Ben. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you very much. Great to be here. And I am special, actually. In all modesty, I consider myself very special indeed. But I am a person who, I suppose, my whole life, I've always been kind of like, I think for my whole life, I've had a feeling that an interest in things that, like, the paranormal, which developed into ufology, government cover-ups, and things like that, and this has continued and it strengthened through the course of my life. Several events helped push it along.
Yeah.
To the point where I eventually became active and set up Hospital Porters Against the New World Order, and then I started doing, like yourself, I started my own radio show, and I started a YouTube channel, and I've written some books as well.
Oh,
and
fantastic.
I suppose because I was a hospital porter for 23 years, I thought, well, Hospital Porters Against the New World Order sounds quite good, because there's a guy in.
Quite
catchy. There used to be a guy. Yes, yeah. I thought it just came to me because I was learning about a chap called Jack McLam, who was an American, and he had something called Police Against the New World Order. And I thought, well, it's good for police, it's good for hospital porters. So
exactly.
I come to realize that these issues, including government cover-ups and things like that, I think they're the most important issues affecting the world today. And I think gaining an understanding of them has become a necessity. So that's what I've done. I've dedicated my life to this, really.
Wow. So can you tell us where your journey began? How did it first start for you?
It's tricky because, I mean, I was born in a small village in West Wales. I was there, and I was a child. And I think even when I was quite little, I enjoyed a programme called Arthur C. Clarke's Mysterious World.
I remember that.
You probably know that too. Yeah. You can get them all on YouTube now. In fact, I've watched them all again in my adulthood,
and they're very good.
They're really good, and I love that. And I must have been, probably when I watched that, I'd been 5 years old, perhaps a little bit older, and it really struck a chord with me, and I started asking. As soon as I was old enough to enjoy books, I asked my parents to buy me books on these things. And I got the Osborne book on ghosts and the Osborne book on UFOs. Didn't get the monsters one. I really wanted that, and I could never find it.
Oh.
And I have actually got a copy now, which, now I'm older.
Yes, I think I bought it, my son, from Abe Books or something.
Yeah, I was great. These really were quite formative for me. And now when I was 8 years old, my family up and they moved to Oxford, which is where I live to this day. And I think this interest continued, and this developed into more of an interest in UFOs. And indeed, then I started exploring the politics of these issues, which include things such as that the state actually takes a strong interest in these subjects too, especially UFOs, not exclusively, but and believe, I mean, it's not very original to say this, but the X-Files TV series was quite influential on me. And I know it's just fictional, but I think it's the closest thing to a creation myth that our community has. And the chap who created it, Chris Carter, he said he did base it on existing theories about the real world. And I got to the point where I think, well, funny enough, it was a completely slightly different matter. When my daughter was 11 years old, she came home from school and she told me that the school wanted to take her fingerprints. And I thought, well, why is that? And I suddenly struck me very suddenly that I was dealing with something very real. Up till then, there had been an abstract element to my research and my studies. I've been active on the forums. This was in 2006, this happened. And I've been active on the old forums, which I still think they're great. They're better than Facebook, where we discussed conspiratorial and ufological and paranormal matters. And then suddenly I realized that what she was. This was really a real thing. It was in my face. It was now affecting my family. I was furious about it, of course. I told the school they absolutely could not do such thing.
I've never heard of that, and I've been a teacher for 20 years.
If
Never
not,
heard of that. Never heard of that.
Well, I mean, this was to do with the library. It's something to do with they wanted to have a fingerprint reader for the children with the library.
Oh,
I mean,
wow.
hopefully, I mean, this was like 2006, so that's like 18 years ago. Now, if my daughter's now 29. If it's gone away, that's great. If it's gone away during your career, that'd be brilliant. That's what I hope has happened.
Definitely. Because it would be an infringement on a human right. Why should people have your fingerprints on file unless you've done something wrong?
Exactly. Yeah, this is my point. That's why I refused. But I then became active and I started looking into the this. I set up my own website and started becoming more active and producing my own content. I've also had experiences. I've had personal experiences of some of these, what you might call strange phenomena in my time.
Oh, great. I'd love to hear.
Sure. I mean, for example, one very interesting thing happened was this would have been a bit about in the mid 90s. I was in bed and I woke up and I sat up very suddenly and I was, this would have been in the early hours of the morning. And believe it or not, there was what looked like a small boy with a nightgown on, one of the old-fashioned nightgowns. He was kneeling on the floor of my bedroom. And even though he looked like a boy, he was kind of translucent. He looked like smoke that keeps its shape. And as I looked at him, he had his hands clasped in front of his face as if he was praying like that. And as I looked at him, he looked turned and looked at me and our eyes met, even though I could see straight through him. He was like smoke, you know. But then he slowly lifted up into the air and drifted away. And he fade and he while he was doing so, he faded to nothing. And I wasn't scared. I just sat there thinking, wow. I felt no fear. Just wow, what's that? I mean and I
That's an
can't prove that.
incredible
Yeah,
thing.
it was an extraordinary experience, and of course I didn't take a photo of him. I can't prove that that wasn't some kind of hypnopompic illusion because I had just woken from sleep. I woke suddenly from sleep. This has happened. It has actually happened to me a few times when I wake suddenly from sleep and my dream, what I was dreaming about, will continue for a few seconds. For example, if I hear music in my dreams, believe it or not, when I wake up, I'm completely awake, but I can hear music. I can hear the music, and it's
Gosh.
just for a few seconds. But I mean, I wasn't dreaming about this boy though at the time. So that was a very odd experience indeed. And then there was another one which I think has more is better in terms of evidence. And this is much more recent. This was in 2000 and 2008. No. Yeah, it was 2008. Yeah. I'd just begun a relationship with a lady called Sue who lived in Nottingham, and I live in Oxford, and I'd been to visit her about three times, and we were becoming more and more fond of each other, and it was pretty obvious that you know we were going steady, so to speak. And I was on my way home from visiting her once at one point, that and I was sitting on the train, and I was just sitting in the seat on the train. This was in November, I remember, and of course it was getting late at night and evening, and it was dark outside, and when you're I'm sure if you've been on a train at night, you probably know that the windows are a bit like a mirror because it's all dark outside. You may see a couple of lights flicking past, but generally it's dark out and you can't see anything outside because there's lights on the interior of the cabin of the train is well lit. So I was sitting there with my arms folded like that, and I started to go into kind of half asleep state. So I was sort of like drifting off because I was a bit drowsy. I went like that, and I was sort of looking at the window. I was just looking at the window. And my eyes were. I was in like a half asleep state. Suddenly, I realized there was a. I could. I was. He was. I was actually looking at a reflection in the window, and suddenly there was this man there, and I could see his reflection straight ahead of me, out of focus, because my eyes were out of focus. But in my peripheral vision, I could actually see him. A man was standing in the aisle of the train, looking at me. And I'd say a man of middle age, thin hair. I remember he had very thin hair. I remember that. And he was wearing a white jacket with buttons at the front, like a bar steward.
Oh yeah, on a train, yeah.
Yeah, and he just and I was con I remember being sort of aware of him and not wanting to. I mean, like I say, it was slightly out of focus. So I couldn't see him that clear, but I didn't want to move too much because I didn't. I wanted to keep studying him in my sort of half asleep way. I was conscious of what I was seeing, and aware of what I was seeing, and realizing I was seeing something rather strange. And he didn't move. He just stood there in the aisle of the train, few rows of seats in front of me. And then suddenly I did wake up properly, and I blinked. I just blinked my eyes and sat up, and he was gone. Now that's weird in itself, but it gets
Wow.
weirder. It gets much weirder. I went and visited Sue again as soon as I could, and I described the experience to her. And she gasped, and she went upstairs and brought down her photo album, and she opened it up and she showed me this picture. It's a photograph of a guy in a bar steward's jacket behind a bar in a hotel, and he had like thin hair and that. And he said, "Is that the man you saw?" I mean, I didn't know. I had not seen this photograph before. I must stress that. And I said, he looks a bit like, I said, it might be. He looks very much like him. I'm not 100% sure, but it looks very much like him. And she said, "Oh, that's my dad. He died in 1988."
Oh, I've
And
got
there was like
all
a, that was a thunderclap
goosebumpy.
moment. That really was a real thunderclap moment, you know. And it's extraordinary that if that was, did I encounter the ghost of her father? Yeah. If that was true, because I didn't know her until like a few months before this. And I didn't know what her dad looked like. I didn't even know her dad. I knew her dad was died. I died. I didn't know when. And so what this could mean, I mean, if her father became a spirit, could it mean that he retains of not just his consciousness, but he retains some kind of awareness of his own identity as a person when he was alive, as well as a memories of the life he'd lived and the ability to see into the world he'd left behind, the world of the living. Because if he was, then he was. It makes sense that he was interested in me.
Yeah, coming to check you out.
He wanted what he said, what kind of men are hanging around with my daughter? He may have been following me around just to
Yeah.
see what kind of man I was. Hope I met with his approval. But I think about it, is he maybe it could be he may have followed me around for quite a long period of time, but I didn't see him. I only saw him because I was in that half asleep state. I was in that altered state of consciousness that maybe allowed me to perceive things I wouldn't normally see. You know what I
Yeah.
mean? That was a very odd thing.
Wow, that's fascinating.
And it's the evidence. What's interesting is there's evidence in the form of the fact that this man was unknown to me, and I didn't know what he looked like. So if I'd seen the photograph beforehand, you could say, well, that was my imagination playing tricks on me. But it couldn't have been. That couldn't be an explanation for it. You see what I mean?
Wow.
It's odd,
Yeah,
isn't it?
that is fascinating. Wow. And often when people see things, they don't see what they, people class as a full-bodied apparition, and you've seen too.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that's right. A lot of, I think, well, a very common one is like it's like some kind of cloud of vapor or something is what a lot of people report seeing. I know a lot of people say, well, I just saw this big cloud of smoke or steam that came, but it was moving around and things like that. That's quite a common one.
Wow. So how did that then lead you into more to the UFO side?
The UFO. My interest in UFOs grew alongside my interest in the paranormal because the two are connected, very much indeed. Most people who believe in UFOs also believe in ghosts, and vice versa, I tend to find. It's like a.
Yeah, I do find that people do. And also, do you think that ghosts and aliens are connected?
It's possible because now this is an idea. John Keel, a very, very prominent ufologist, had this idea. That it's possible when we talk about UFOs and ghosts, where it's a generic categorization. which may refer to more than one phenomenon. And we have maybe incorrectly, we may incorrectly associate them together. So it could be that some of the phenomenon are something that are somehow connected. For example, what Kiel discovered was that whenever there was a UFO flap in an area where lots of UFOs were sighting, you also got lots of ghost sightings. You had poltergeists and things like that. These would occur at the same time, and he's decided there was some kind of force, that there was a force at work in a particular location. I mean, a classic one was a place in West Virginia, USA, called Point Pleasant, which is one of the ones he studied most of all, in which there seems that one phenomenon will trigger the other and vice versa, as if there is a connection. And this is not to say, I mean, this is not to say that extraterrestrials are not real and we're not being visited by beings from other worlds, because I think we are. But not every UFO might be that. In the same time, not everything that comes to visit Earth might not necessarily come from another planet, even though it clearly does leave, it has a physical presence. For example, extraterrestrials, they leave marks on the ground. It's called a close encounter of the second kind. For example, they'll leave marks on the ground. The extraterrestrials, the beings, will leave footprints, and they sometimes die and they leave behind a corpse, like an animal would, and things like that. So they have a physical presence, there's no doubt about that. But at the same time, you can't deny that what Kiel discovered. His most interesting work was with the Men in Black. That this is a common sort of comedy science fiction film that I didn't think much of, to be honest. The one with Will Smith. I didn't suit, it didn't appeal to me much, but because the real thing is actually very different. For a long time, what happened was people who have an encounter with something strange, a UFO or something, or its associated phenomenon, might get a knock on the door and visited by some strange men wearing dark suits. And very often they have sunglasses, and they sometimes look a bit retro, and they have trilby hats. Occasionally, they drive a car that looks a bit old-fashioned, even though it's shiny brand new. Looks like it's just come out of the factory. And then they'll just say, "We think you don't talk about what you've just seen. Keep it quiet. Don't talk about it." And things like that. And a lot of the time, people have wondered if this is another part of the government cover-up. The people who maybe covered up the Roswell incident are still working on that today to keep people quiet today. However, there's something about the Men in Black which indicates there's something, they're not government agents. There's something supernatural about them. They appear to have very strange features. They exhibit very weird behavior. Sometimes their voice sounds strange. Along with John Keel, Nick Redfern is another good researcher into the area of the Men in Black. And he's a very odd human.
Often they seem to have plasticky skin, don't they?
Yeah.
And strange eyes, maybe sometimes no hair and no eyebrows, no eyelashes, all sorts of
Yes.
reports,
And on occasions when they're seen without their sunglasses, they are reported to have very unusual eyes, sometimes reptilian or cat-like eyes. They have lipstick. They appear to be wearing lipstick sometimes. Even
Yeah,
though
almost like they've
mm.
painted their lips on because they don't normally
Yes.
have lips.
And this weird skin. Yes, it's extremely odd. It's like they are wearing some kind of costume. They also behave strangely. Their voice often sounds very strange. They often have accents that can't be placed. They seem to speak all languages, which is interesting. Even a very rare one, an unusual one like Scottish Gaelic or Basque, they'll address you in your own language.
Yeah,
And
and I've also heard that sometimes they have difficulty with very simple things that we take for granted, such as pens, not knowing how to work them and stuff like that. And they also come with a sense of dread
very much so.
that they instill in people.
People find themselves extremely frightened when they meet them, because they. You think, well, if these weird guys with turned up at my door, I'd tell them to get lost. Just I'm not scared to poke at guys in suits. Why should I be scared? But they seem to be able to have some kind of effect and change your thoughts and feelings. And yeah, they act weird. Like, for example, some of them don't know how to open doors. You have to open the. They don't. They sort of reach out for a doorknob and then they hesitate as they don't know how to turn the doorknob. Things like that. It's very weird. So that's another, that deepens the mystery, I think. It leads to, I think, more Any sort of deeper area of the mystery.
I've always found it really fascinating that it's reported that often if people see a UFO or something similar, that the men in black turn up in a ridiculously short time, or they turn up when the person hasn't reported it to anyone, and the person's thinking, well, how on earth could they know that I've seen this because I haven't actually told anybody, which I find really fascinating.
It's extremely, and they do sometimes weird things, like they'll kidnap people. I mean, Jim Templeton, he reported meeting the Men in Black in 1964. This is a guy who took a photograph, which became it did become quite famous in the papers as a supposed picture of an alien. He was a picture of his daughter, his 5-year-old daughter, who had like a there's a strange creature that appeared to be standing behind her head. He said he was visited by some weird people who seemed to know all about him, and including personal issues to do with work, and they talked a lot to him, and then they told him to get in the car, and they said, show me where you saw this thing, and he drove them to this place in Cumbria where he'd taken a photograph, and they got out of the car, but then they went back to the car and they drove off and left him there, and he had to walk back.
Oh, wow.
Things like this, it's weird sort of things like that. And he said, why would you do? And he said, I don't know. And like many people, he didn't understand why he'd got into a car with these strange men, especially when they were extremely, they made him feel so frightened. Definitely.
I wonder if they're connected to the black-eyed children, because I know there are some crossover similarities between the feelings that people get from them as well.
Was literally just thinking that myself. Great minds, you see. I was literally
Yeah.
thinking of the black-eyed children. They're very similar. I mean, the black-eyed kids are one of the most frightening aspects, one of the most frightening things that you can actually encounter. In
Yeah.
terms of the phenomena, it's one of the most worrying and frightening. But they knock on the door and they say, "Can I come in, please?" And they have like completely black eyes. And they're not just their irises; their entire cornea.
Just, oh,
It's just
terrifying.
like a Yeah, and again, I would slam the door in their face and run away and hide somewhere, I think. But of course, the people who encounter them, what they describe is very mixed feelings, along with the terror and dread that they feel when they encounter this strange being, is an almost irresistible desire to do what they want.
Yeah.
And funnily enough, every single person who reports black-eyed children encounters, and this is the scary bit, actually, it's the most scary bit. They report that they did refuse to let the children in, which means that are there some that did live,
Well,
are
this
there
is
some
what
that
I
did,
wonder. I'd love to hear
they're
from
not here to tell the
the,
tale?
well, yeah, I'd love to hear
Well,
what happened if someone did let them in.
maybe they're no longer around to tell us. I mean, this is the scary thing. Did they suffer some terrible fate if they did let these children in? Because they're obviously none of them are here to. None of them have. I don't know of anyone who's reported letting these children in, although they're seen very regularly.
Yeah, and a lot of people seem to be in two different camps about them. They either think they're alien related or demon related. What do you think?
Excuse me.
Oh,
The
all right.
they sin mostly in North America, although they not exclusively,
Yeah.
and they've been called by the indigenous Amerindians, refer to them as skinwalkers, and we believe that they are they well they seem it's very similar to their own legend, the skinwalker, and that is a beast that can shapeshift and turn into different forms.
Yeah.
And there's a place actually called Skinwalker Ranch, which is
Oh, yes. It's one of
on
my
their way.
favorite things. One of my favorite things. I've
And
got the book as well.
there's a book, and there's several TV programs about it. It's very
Yeah.
good. But they have and they in their mythology, they say that these skinwalkers actually are they can actually assume human form or the form of an animal, and they will often pick on people alone in the woods. For example, if you go for a walk in the woods, they'll sometimes come up to you. Sometimes they can appear as a child. They sometimes appear as a child, or a very enticing sexual partner, a beautiful man or woman. And it is similar to the idea of demons, and the idea of temptation and luring you away and things like this.
Yeah, like in the
And
Greek stories, the sirens sort of thing,
yes, it's the
and
siren.
mermaids even, yeah.
You couldn't resist their singing. on yeah, and the ships will crash into the rocks.
Yeah.
Now they're not seen exclusively in North America. They have actually been seen all over the world, and there's been some interesting sightings from Cannock Chase, which
Yeah,
is the
well, I went there last year to try and
oh,
find them,
cool.
but we didn't have any luck at all.
Cool. I've never been to Cannock Chase, but I mean, I'd love to go there, and I wouldn't go on my own. I'd go with a group because I
Yeah.
think people who wander around there on their own are asking for trouble.
Oh, definitely. I think there were
Yeah.
five of us, but
That's
we
best thing.
encountered nothing. It was
Oh.
really disappointing.
But I'd like to go there at some point and have a snoop around. Yeah. Because there's been some black-eyed children encounters in Cannock Chase and every other places. I mean, I don't. Some people say they're like genetic experiments and things like that. I doubt it. I doubt it because they're often seen, for example, walking along busy streets. They're often seen in the middle of cities where
Yeah.
they'd be spotted by, if they were like there all the time and they were like physical beings, they'd be spotted by lots of people.
Yeah.
I think they're not genetic experiments. I think they're some kind of, they just somehow manifest in our world and and approach certain people to target us in some way, probably for
Yeah.
malevolent purposes. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
If I saw one of those, I'd want to be in a group of people, definitely. Yeah.
Definitely. Do you believe in the idea of things like ghosts and cryptids and even maybe aliens just existing in different dimensions and being able to come through to our dimension?
Yes, I do think that's a good explanation for at least some of the encounters. I mean,
Mm.
in terms of Bigfoot, I mean, I think there is a creature. There's a creature called Bigfoot. I mean, I've just been interviewing Richard Freeman for my own show, who's a good.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever interviewed him. He's a cryptozoologist.
I haven't, but I've heard of him.
He's a very interesting chap, actually. Yeah. And however, there are some encounters. For example, there's some instances involving creatures that look like Bigfoot, where it appears they're not actually. I wouldn't say they're not actually cryptids. And one ex good example happened in 1966 at a place called Presque Isle. Now, this is at Lake Erie, United States. A group of teenagers were in their car and they decided to go for a picnic on the beach at a place called Presque Isle. This is on the shores of a lake, this huge
Yeah.
lake, Lake Erie. And it's like a sea, you know, there's like a beach, it's like a big sea, really. And
Yeah.
they park their car on the beach. And then as they do so, they see a flying saucer landing of a short distance away. I mean, they don't see where it lands. They just see it descend from some trees, maybe a few hundred yards away. And they look at it for a while and think, wow, that's strange. And then they go back to the car because they're like frightened. And just as luckily, they get into the car on time because then a Bigfoot-like creature comes out of the bushes and comes up to the car and starts attacking it, kicking it and scratching it with its claws. And they're in the car absolutely pricking it. They're terrified, understandably. They're
Yeah.
too frightened to drive away or to start the engine. They just lock the doors and make sure the windows are shut and just like huddle while this thing
Yeah.
is like. But it's a horrific and it's a terrifying story. Interestingly, there was damage to the car, which you know the mechanic records scratches as if they thought it's maybe a bear had done it. It's
Yeah.
like because there was like deep scratches on the thin metal covering of the roof and things like that. And the, but then the, this. This is unlikely to be a Bigfoot. It's in a populated area where there's lots of towns. There's Port Erie, which is nearby, which is a big town.
Yeah.
Actual Bigfoot cryptids are seen in very remote areas like the Rocky Mountains. And also, the fact that it was there coincidentally at the same time as the UFO indicates there's a connection between the two. It's
Yeah.
unlikely it was coincidental that the two appeared together. That's, I thought, was a very interesting story.
Yeah, that
Yeah.
is, that's very unusual actually to for people to report seeing both. But I have heard lots of stories of what they describe as interdimensional Bigfoots, actually changing into orange balls of light,
Yeah,
and then sort of shooting off.
I've heard of those too. I've heard of many, and I've heard of them a bit. They sometimes ch they do change shape, and they do sometimes they're associated with UFOs. They've been seen getting in and out of flying saucers as if they're like the grey aliens. They've been seen in locations where they would be like the black-eyed kids. They've been seen in towns, in the middle of towns, in parks, in towns where an actual population of large primates wouldn't be able to stay hidden.
Yeah.
Things like that.
Yeah.
That leads me to suspect that there is some of them at least, some of these encounters at least are clearly not just, they're not cryptid. They're more likely some kind of interdimensional thing. I mean, other dimensions, you see, they exist. I mean, serious physicists are saying this now. They're saying that that there are parallel universes. And the only way that the laws of physics can work is if parallel universes exist. It's possible that there's some way of, in some situations, these universes kind of rub up against each other. They even say that they call them membranes, and sometimes they collide, and in which case you have like a kind of bleed over between the two. It's interesting.
It
I mean,
is,
this
yeah.
is something I've wondered about, because I've had another experience I'd like to tell you about, and
Yeah.
it's this is actually much more recent. This was in I'll have to go to my notes for this. This is in 2021. I was actually doing some shopping. Now, one of my jobs, so since I stopped being a hospital porter, I've got several jobs. I'm self-employed, and one of them is to do some grocery shopping for this old lady because she can't walk very well. And so she gives me a shopping list, and I go and buy whatever she needs from the shopping. When she gives me some money and a shopping list, and I carry it back to her home in another part of the city, which is where I live, Oxford. And this is a very it's easy to time this task because I always begin it at the moment that I finish another job, and I do the same. It's the same 2 days every week, and there's a job that ends at 3:15 p.m. every time, and it takes me 20 minutes to walk to the supermarket, rough 10 minutes to find the items and pay for them, depending on how crowded it is, and about a quarter of an hour to transport them to this old lady's house. So there are some variables. I might have to wait for a bus for a bit longer. How many people are in the queue for the till? But I always finish the job. I've noticed this. I always finish the job round about 4 p.m., give or take 5 or 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And on this particular day, it was very routine indeed. And so I went, I arrived at the bus stop, and this is a busy route. The longest I have to wait is 7 or 8 minutes for a bus, and there was no traffic jams. So the bus took me to this old lady's house. I let myself in with her front door key. She was out at the time, so I had a key. So I put the items into the refrigerator, into the cupboards. And I left her house, and for the first time, I hadn't looked at my clock on my phone at all, because I don't usually bother. I just happened to glance at my phone for another purpose. There was a text message or something, and I realized it was 4:43 p.m.
Oh.
Now, that shouldn't be possible. I don't know how it happened, because it's like this is the missing time thing, you know? And I don't.
Did you see anything unusual?
That's the thing. This is my first thought. I don't remember anything specifically unusual. There's a slightly odd occurrence. I had to walk to get to the shop. It's a big out of town supermarket, sort of a suburban supermarket. I have to walk along this track. It's like a cycle path that runs along the Southern Bypass in Oxford, and there's a green reservation between the bypass and the track, 30 feet wide. It's full of thick trees and bushes, and unfortunately, an awful lot of litter.
Yeah.
Now, I briefly this I often do this because I left the path to go into the woods just because I needed a toilet, which is very easy to do because it's all very private. There's like bushes and things, so I went and basically went to the bushes to go to the toilet. And now the path was almost deserted. I did check before I went into the bushes for privacy's sake. I wanted to see if there was anyone there. Now, there was one person. There's one person in the distance approaching me. And I think in those bushes, this is the only time during those 90 minutes I was out of sight from others. And the thing about it is, though, when I came out of the bushes, that person was gone. Now, that person wasn't there. I expected to see him a little bit closer because I was only in there for a couple of minutes. I came out and I expected to see that person a little bit closer, and they weren't. And they weren't. And I just thought, oh, well, I've made a mistake because I didn't see that person very clearly. They were walking away from me instead of approaching me, I think. Or maybe they turned off somewhere, you know, I said anything like that. Maybe they went to the bushes themselves. That was the only thing. And it's not something that would have bothered me particularly if what had happened hadn't happened. I'd probably forgotten about it. But this is what you might call missing time. Now, I had none of the other, nothing else weird happened. And indeed, all the symptoms that people who have missing time get, like people who are, for example, abducted by aliens, all the symptoms that they often report and experience, you know, strange dreams, marks on the body, things like that, didn't happen to me. None of those things happened to me. And nothing like that has happened since. And that was like October 2021, 2.5 years ago. And
Yeah.
But I can't account for the fact that It was probably, I can't know, I don't know exactly how long it was. I mean, I did, thing is, I went and paid with cash in the supermarket, being the libertarian that I am. So I don't have like a, any, there's no records of my purchase in the supermarket. The bus ticket I did manage to find, I'd thrown it, I sort of like, it was at the bottom of my pocket. Then it just said I got on the bus like a little bit before the, whatever happened must have happened before I got on the bus, because the bus ticket indicated that I got on there at, was it about 4:30 or something? So whatever strange thing happened must have happened before then, before I got
Yeah.
on the bus. Apart from that, I don't
Oh.
know anything else. I can't tell anything else.
Yeah.
That's a weird thing, isn't it?
That is very odd. Very strange indeed. Maybe there was a portal in the bushes.
You know, I mean, could, who knows? I mean, I've got a friend who's advised me to get hypnotic regression, and I do hesitate.
Oh, really? I'd love to do that. I'd really love to do that.
I think I'm a bit worried about what I might find out. I mean, I don't want to. I mean, maybe I should do. Maybe I should like pluck up courage and just do that. It's just, I mean, I think if it was really affecting my life badly in some way, I would. I mean, for me, it would just be to satisfy some kind of curiosity.
Yeah.
Because I mean, what happened? I was a bit alarmed when this first happened. I thought, well, what's going on? I mean, but then my alarm sort of dissipated when I realized nothing really bad seems to have happened to me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I have, if something took me, then they returned me. You know what I
Yeah.
mean? That I didn't recall anything strange happening at the time, apart from that person walking towards me and then disappearing. It's a bit odd.
Yeah, that is very strange. So do you, so have you met people who claim to have seen actual alien creatures or been abducted? Have you spoken to people
Yes, all the
about
time. I've got
that?
many
Yeah.
friends who have had these experiences. People I actually believe. I mean, of course, I can't prove that. Well, I can't prove every single thing they say because they're just reporting what they've experienced. But these people who are sound of mind, this is a, and indeed, people who have these experiences tend to be just normal people. There's no, they don't have mental illnesses and things like that. They report remarkable experiences, and apart from that, they're completely normal. I met this lady. I met this lady once at a conference who seemed completely unremarkable, and she was dating a friend of mine. And she reports. She said, "Well, I was married to this man who was not human. He was kind of an alien." And
Wow.
I thought, that was just like, that blew my mind. That really did.
Gosh. And what evidence did she say she had for him not being human?
She just told me a little bit about her life with him. She actually wrote a book, and then she died quite suddenly, actually. She was it, she drowned while she was swimming at sea when she was on holiday. It's very sad.
Gosh.
I don't think there's anything suspicious about that. I think she just got out of her depth, like so many people do, and
Yeah.
couldn't get back to the shore. But what's the book called? I think it's called The Uninvited or something. Her name was Jenny, but her pen name was Susan Reed. I remember that. But she reported this in all seriousness, and I did read the book, but it was a long time ago.
I have a book called The Uninvited. I wonder if it's the same one, although it might be quite a popular title.
There's several called The Uninvited. That might not be the
Yeah.
right title either, you know. But people report. People have to come forward and they report these things, and they've got nothing to gain from them. And sometimes they suffer. They get a lot of, you know, it actually causes a lot of problems in their life when they
Yeah.
have these experiences and they talk out about them. Betty and Barney Hill, for example, the
Yeah.
they're called the first alien abductees. They weren't. They were the first that were really publicized and kind of popularized the idea of being abducted by aliens. But you know, they never changed their story. I mean, Barney, the husband, he died in a few years later, but Betty, she lived until I think about 2002, and she never
Yeah.
changed her story.
Yeah.
She never once changed her story. She told that she was interviewed just before she died, and she said, "Yeah, no, it really happened. This is how it happened." It's, I mean, in the case of somebody I know, he's always reporting strange things happening to him, and of course, you could say he makes them up. However, he does when if you hang around with him quite a long time, sometimes weird things will happen. So, for example, I was with him once. He was at work. He's a painter and decorator, and he was at work, and we were just having a chat. He was on his break, and I was just sitting there, and suddenly he was wearing this kind of shirt, and it went like that. It went, it's like someone pulled it. It just went like that. No one was there. But it just went, and I thought, what was that? And he said, oh, and he sort of like shrugged and chuckled. He's used to this sort of thing. But he was literally right there. I mean, I was literally right in front of him. There was no one else around.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, that he didn't, he said that sort of thing happens to me all the time. And he does indeed report things like this in his book. And I'd
That'd be
actually
awesome.
seen, I was actually with him when something strange happened. So I'm inclined to believe him.
Yeah. Do you think people are especially picked out, or do you think they choose random people?
There, I think they do. There must be some reason why they go after certain people. I mean, we say they. I mean, it could be. There could be many, many different beings involved
Yeah.
in this. I mean, indeed, people report. In the people in the beings people report encounters with are very varied.
Yeah.
There's virtually a taxonomy of them, from the greys to the
Yeah,
mantis to the
yeah.
cryptids to the Nordics and the little blue things, and there's all kinds. And it could be that different. It's clear we're dealing with more than one species, and they probably have originated from many, many different habitats. They probably come from many, many different places, and they do seem to have a wide variety of agendas, and they exhibit very, very different behavior.
Yeah. I
From
have
very.
heard a theory that somebody said, and I found that quite interesting. And I can't remember who it was now, but they had this theory that everybody who had been approached by extraterrestrials or had had sightings of UFOs, that they had been chosen to see those things, and that when these extraterrestrials finally reveal themselves, that these are the chosen people who will be saved, which all sounds a bit fantastical to me, even more
That's
than the idea of them.
that's that sounds like, I mean, there's several what you might call UFO based religions that have ideas like that.
Yeah.
I'm afraid I find them rather phony. I've looked into a couple of these, and they seem a bit strange. It doesn't appeal to me at all.
Yeah.
What I suspect is that some of these beings obviously have an interest in us. Some of them may be targeting people randomly. Others may be interested in people for a particular reason. I mean, we know there was some families that are abducted over many generations, over several generations.
Yeah.
There's one lady I know who is, she's of gypsy origins, ancestry, and her father was a horse whisperer, and she experienced multiple abductions over the course of her life, and her son does too. And indeed, these things. So there are some families that seem to be particularly associated with these experiences. They've been
Yeah.
going on a long time. I mean, you can't really trace a beginning to this. As I said,
Yeah.
Betty and Barney Hill were certainly not the first people to have this experience. Is we've got every reason to think it was happening in prehistoric times, although people
Yeah.
interpret it differently, being
Yeah. I
spirited
mean,
away by the fairies and things like that.
exactly. And I know some people believe, and now I sound like the guy on the show now. If you watch Ancient Aliens, he believes or seems to report that he thinks this has been going on for thousands of years.
Yeah, I think it has. These creatures have an interest in us. At least some of them have been around for a long, long time, and they may have been involved in some kind of symbiosis or partnership from us from the moment we evolved. There's some ideas that they actually, in a sense, gave birth to us, and that we are essentially partly maybe engineered by them, or even related to them in some way. I mean, there are
Yeah.
some weird things about the humans that some people claim doesn't fit in with the idea that we're just another kind of ape. For example, we are different physiologically to the creatures that are closest related to us in the animal kingdom, like chimpanzees and gorillas. We have multiple differences to them. We have this upright stance, which, to be fair, there were used to be apes. There used to be other apes that walked upright. Indeed, Bigfoot seemed to walk upright and
Yeah.
has flat feet and things like that. But our skin is more like the skin of a pig. It has subcutaneous fat. We don't have hair all over our bodies. I mean, obviously we have hair in some parts, like the top of our heads. But we most of our bodies have no long hair on them. Most of our body has no long hair. Instead, we have the subcutaneous fat like a pig. We have a nose which points downwards rather than forwards, which again is unique to us. Things like that. And of course, we're very intelligent compared to the other creatures. I mean, sure, I mean, chimps and gorillas are pretty intelligent. They can be taught to play football and things like that. But they couldn't build a rocket. They couldn't build a car, things like that.
I did hear one theory which I thought was quite interesting, was that where we have kind of parallel species, such as the Neanderthals, which we're not really related to, and they died out. Some people believe that Neanderthals were the original humans, and the aliens sort of made us, and then we wiped out the Neanderthals, which I thought was quite a creative idea.
It could be. I mean, I know Maria Wheatley, who's a very interesting lady. She's found the remains of what she called long-skulled people, and these are different to the they're different to the Neanderthals, but they appear to be another humanoid species that's probably closely related to us.
Are they in
That,
South America?
yep, the Paracas skulls in South America, but they've also been found near Stonehenge. They appear to have lived all over the world, and indeed they were. It appears they were. They seem they all died sometime around the 3rd or 4th millennium BC, and the most recent skeletons that have been found date to that area. So a lot of them have been found to have died from violence, as if there was some kind of war or genocide in the ancient world, in the prehistoric world. Which and the people remain were the round skull people, as people like which is our own species. Yes, that's
Wow,
It
it's
could
just
be,
so fascinating.
it is, it really is. I mean, there's so many of these mysteries, and I mean, I've become, I think I've dedicated my life to this sort of thing. I mean, I've not least because I've had personal experiences along this line. You know what I mean? It's
So tell us a bit about your radio program, how that started, and what sort of things do you talk about on it?
Right, well, it's called Hapanmo Radio, and it's like another part of the Hapanmo franchise, which is what I set up in 2006 after my daughter was fingerprinted. The show, it's about all the kinds of things that I have an interest in. For example, UFOs, ghosts, the paranormal, government cover-ups of various kinds, and cryptozoology and other subjects like that. Richard Freeman is actually going to be my guest this week on Thursday. So that'll go live Thursday at 8 p.m. And it's
Fantastic.
every Thursday at 8 p.m. it goes live. And afterwards, if you missed the live show, it doesn't matter because there is a downloadable podcast which you can get for free on the platform. So you can listen to the show anytime you like.
Are there any particular people that you'd really, really like to chat to that you haven't done yet?
There's a few, yeah. Who have I not talked about? Who would I like to speak to? Haven't yet. It's probably Danny Sheehan. I'd like to have a conversation with him. He's a lawyer, an American lawyer who's involved in the UFO disclosure movement. And I'd
Oh,
like to
yeah.
talk to Lou Elizondo, who's like this.
Oh, gosh, yeah, that would be amazing, wouldn't
He's
it?
yeah. To see if we get him on the show. I wrote to him a couple of times. He hasn't got back to me, but he's probably in quite high demand. I'd like to talk to him. I'd like to talk to Jonathan Downes as well. And I may well be able to do this because, I mean, I've never met the guy, but Richard is one of his best friends. So he's a cryptozoologist. I'd like to talk to the ancient aliens guy. I'd like to interview him. I've met him because I did meet him and speak to him because he was at the Blackpool Awakening Conference. And I did meet him briefly. Giorgio Tsoukalos. I'd like to,
That's it,
yeah, I'd be interested to talk to him. And, probably several other people. There's lots of scope for future guests. I can always write to people and because like yourself, you're doing the same as me.
And I sort of switch between well-known people and regular people. That's why I put a shout out on the podcast, because sometimes you actually get the most interesting stories from just regular people like you and me,
Yeah.
who've had incredible things happen to them.
Exactly, yes. I mean, you'll find it's a Funnily enough, if you speak openly about your ideas, people will come to sometimes approach you.
Yeah.
And this happened to me. A lady I used to work with, she actually worked at the hospital. She was a domestic cleaner at the hospital. She told me
Yeah.
about her UFO sighting. She told it to me privately when no one else was around.
Yeah.
She'd heard me talking about it. She just obviously didn't want this to be known by everyone. So, and she
Yeah.
described this what she saw.
Yeah. Ah. So, I've got a question then. What do you think about David Icke?
Oh, well, I like David Icke a lot. He was very influential on me, I think, in the sort of early 2000s when I
Yeah.
started reading him in the late 90s. And I became very, very, I used to read every one of his books. I used to go to his live shows. I met him a couple of times. I went to several, I went was a member of his official forum and things like that. And I found him fascinating and really inspiring. I didn't I think I'm now at a position where I'm still interested to hear what he has to say, and I still like the guy, but I feel I've moved on. I feel I've moved on to the point where I don't sort of follow his every word. I don't watch every one
Yeah.
of his iconic videos and things like that.
Yeah.
So, but it'd
I
be,
must
yeah.
admit, I bought a book of his and I read a chapter and I had to put it down and I haven't read anymore. It was too fantastical for me. I just couldn't, I don't know. I think it was so much that to me it didn't feel credible. It's like, how can all these things be happening? How can the royal family be reptilians? Where's your evidence for this? I don't know. It just felt a bit much, really.
It's mind-blowing. I mean, the reptilian agenda in particular is really quite extraordinary. He did a 6-hour interview with this chap in South Africa, Credo Mutwa, and it's really in depth, and it talks about reptilian beings who look human but then shapeshift. This lady, Susan Reid, her book, that's what the man she was married to, he was one of these kinds of aliens, these kinds of beings. Oh, according to her, what she told us. And again, it's as bizarre as it might sound. I mean, I've never seen anyone turn into a lizard, never. And I've
Yeah.
never seen any lizard turn into a human. And I can never prove this is true. But I've met so many people who talk about it, and like who mentioned their own personal experiences, including this guy whose clothing went like that in front of me.
Yeah.
I think there's a case to answer for this, believe it or not. However bizarre it might sound, there is a distinct case to answer for this. There really is. I've written a book, actually. It's this book, Roswell Rising, A Novel of Disclosure. If anyone of your
Oh, okay. Yeah.
listeners want to read this, it's a book about the kind of things I talk about on programs like this.
Yeah.
But I just thought to myself one day, what if we had the truth instead of the lies? What if we everyone knew about it and it became sort of like common knowledge? What would happen? This led to a fictional scenario, which led to this book, which is just a story, but it's about
Yeah.
what would happen if we got the truth. And I've always loved writing fiction, and
Yeah.
I am I've written several I wrote a couple of books before that as well, so I thought, well, I'll write a book about it then. And that led to three. There's actually two sequels, so I call them the Roswell Trilogy.
Yeah. Oh, fantastic. Have you been to Roswell?
You know what? No, I want to go this year, actually. I want to
Yeah.
go to the Roswell Festival, because I can't keep putting these things off, because
Yeah.
I've
It's just
I
so
keep
expensive, though, isn't it, to
it would
go?
cost money. It would cost a lot of money. I mean, I've done a little budget, and I think I can get hold of the money. I think I can probably borrow that money from somebody, or some of it. And some of it will come out of my savings, and I could get there.
Yeah.
But it's something I need to. I can't keep putting it off forever. I've written books about the place. I've got to go there. I've got to go
Yeah.
there.
It'll be an amazing experience. So do you believe that
Yeah.
there are, you know, I mean, I think the military, particularly the US military, have obviously got lots of secret bases and they've got tunnels and maybe they have big bases underneath mountains that have secret doorways coming out, and because I mean, you know, they need to keep things under wraps, whatever it is they're doing and inventing. But do you think any of these places are really harboring extraterrestrials? Are we working with extraterrestrials?
Working with them, I don't know. I mean, I don't know specifically. I do know that there are underground facilities. I mean, some of them are not even secret anymore, like Cheyenne Mountain,
Yeah.
which is in Colorado, which is where the American military has its the NORAD is based there, the North
Yeah.
American Defense Airspace Defense Network, which includes Canada. That actually is not secret anymore. And it's right inside this huge mountain in Colorado. It's designed to survive nuclear strike, so it's in this cave, and oh, there's like big springs around it, so it can resist shock waves and things like that. It has computers and everything like that in it. There are reported to be bases underground facilities elsewhere, and probably some of them are. Some of them we know some of them exist because of Richard Souder and his work, and the fact that he, for example, has pointed to several buildings that have car parks that appear too big for the building. So, for example, if you, according to Souder's laws, if you see a little three up, two down, and it's got like a 50 space car park around it, it's probably more to that building than meets the eye. There must be something
Yeah.
underground. Area 51 fits into this pattern because the Area 51 base has a so many personnel. They've been counted. There are researchers who like count them coming in and out in their secret buses and their secret aircraft, and the number of people who go there and come back are too big for that, for what you see on the surface, simply to be all
Yeah.
that's there. There must be some underground facility there. Now, if it's underground, what's it for? What's going on down there? We know that the government have what they call a black budget, which
Yeah.
I mean all governments have it, not just the
Yeah.
US, in which whenever it publishes like its accounts, there's a discrepancy. If you tot up if the itemized list, you're left over with a certain amount of money which is not listed, and that's called the black budget. And we
Yeah.
know that that's what they're spending that money on,
Yeah.
things like that. And there's also rumors they're involved in. It's darker and less credible, but there's rumors they're involved. They have shares in drug cartels and things like that.
Yeah. And why do you think governments don't want us to know that so let's say for the sake of what we're talking about, let's say it's a given that there are extraterrestrials visiting Earth or living in the middle of Earth or living in the sea or whatever, and the government knows this, or governments all over the world. Why don't they want Joe Bloggs to know? What's your take on it?
There's probably several reasons. One of those is that these creatures, obviously, they have a technological level that's superior to ours, and it's certainly, especially in the form of energy generation. They're not traveling across the universe and through wormholes on Texaco unleaded four star. They have
Yeah.
some kind of they have discovered a form of energy propulsion and propulsion which is different, and it probably involves something that is free and limitless and not environmentally damaging, which would be great. I mean, it would be great if we could have this energy. It would improve our lives enormously. However, I think at the state level, they quite like the idea that they can keep control of us. They can keep us in a certain frame of mind and in a certain lifestyle that allows them to control us, to maintain power, if only to justify their own existence. Because I mean, they can't keep taking taxes from us if they're not needed.
Yeah.
So in other words, when problems come along, I think at one level, I think in the government they quite like those problems. They quite like the fact there are problems because it justifies. They can then come in and say, "Well, look, we'll help you. We'll save you." Things like this. So whenever a problem occurs, they probably rub their hands and think, "Great, now we've got another reason to tax them." That sounds cynical, but I think it's accurate in my view. Another reason is, if I think it's similar, but it's not just that they don't want us having access to this kind of energy which the extraterrestrials could give to us. I think there may be a deep psychological and cultural reason why, from their point of view, humans need to believe we live in what is essentially an oasis of life in an infinite cosmic desert. It was just like this. Carl Sagan used the term pale blue dot. And this refers to a photograph taken by a deep space probe at the Earth. It took a photograph of the Earth from deep space, from far away, and it was literally just a pale blue dot. And I think for psychological and cultural reasons, it's important that we think that. And indeed, there is a document that almost proves this. It's called, I don't remember the title of the document, but it was released by the Brookings Institute, which is a political think tank based in the United States. It was released in, this document was written in 1959 and was sent to NASA and the Soviet Space Agency. This was at the very dawn of the space age. But their recommendation was, it included the recommendation that should they discover signs of life out there, especially intelligent life out there, even the remains of past intelligent life, they should think, people should think twice before shouting it from the rooftops, because it would, until it had been, they said, until there had been an assessment of how it would affect institutions on the on ground, institutions such as the government, such as the church, society in general, cultural norms, things like that. They cited the fact that if encounters, when two societies meet each other and one society has a higher technological level than the other, usually the less technical society suffers very badly. And this has happened on Earth, where humans of different technological levels have met each other. The classic idea is the Spanish conquistadors in the 15th and 16th century, when they actually went to what they called the New World, which is the Americas. And the effect on the local people was devastating. In terms of, but there were several reasons for this. It was very often it was disease, because they didn't have immunity to our diseases and things like this. But their cultures pretty much collapsed within a few decades.
It's quite interesting with the energy idea, because I have heard people sort of saying that if there is a sort of energy that extraterrestrials could give to us, then there would be no more need for fossil fuels. There would be no need for oil, for coal, for gas, and that would basically ruin millions of industries all around the globe and billions and billions and billions of pounds and dollars, which is why they don't want to sort of shout about it, which
Well, you
is
have to,
quite.
everyone who comes across this information for the first time has to pause and think about it. I mean, there's a passage in my book where one of the characters actually says, he says, we'll never, he says, this technology can never be declassified. The public are never going to have access to it. Why not? Says another character. Why not? Well, why don't I turn that question on its head? Why should they? How can we tell them? And he says, you're going to go up to the chairman of Royal Dutch Shell and say, good morning, I've just come to tell you your services are no longer required, just like that. And what's he going to say? All right, no problem. You still need oil to make candles. That's a good idea. Shell candles. They're pretty colors. They smell nice. They won't stain your wallpaper. There'll be a smart dollar on that. You don't get it, do you, Klein? Oil is not just the biggest industry in the world. It is industry. It is the lifeblood and the lubricant of civilization. Take that away, and what happens? The world order as we know it will descend into chaos. The West will fall into mediocrity. India and China will dominate the globe with their huge populations and vast resources. Energy needs to be rationed and distributed strategically in order to maintain a stable human world. And that's just a passage from my book there. And that's not me talking. That's like I'm playing devil's advocate there. That's the bad guy talking. But yeah, I mean, but from our point of view, it would be wonderful. It would eliminate poverty. It would eliminate environmental destruction, things like that. But from the point of view of the state, it would be very, it would be unpredictable at best, and they don't like things to be unpredictable. Then they're neophobes. A neophobe is someone who's scared of change, like that line in the Matrix, you're afraid of change. They don't like things to be unpredictable and chaotic, because they might lose their grip on society.
And being in power,
Yeah, they might not
definitely.
be, they wouldn't be in power anymore, so yeah.
So if there are extraterrestrials on Earth, do you think the president knows of the United States, or do you think even he's kept in the dark?
Joe Biden.
Well,
I don't think he knows
whoever
how to tie up his
the
he doesn't know how to tie his
president
shoelaces. The guy probably can't find his way to the toilet.
is.
No,
The
this is.
generic presidents.
All right, yes. Well, it depends. I think it depends on the president. I think some know more than others. I think Kennedy knew quite a lot, which is maybe why they got rid of him,
Because there
because he.
was a rumor, wasn't there, that Albert Einstein went with one of the presidents to go and view one of these creatures?
Yeah, Einstein and several other people, who appear to know. Carl Sagan has been rumored to have been briefed in, which is why, and
Mm.
they said he's, because funny enough, strangely enough, after about 1968, he changed his tune and he started producing disinformation. The Cosmos TV series, which is very interesting, also contains a lot of disinformation about UFOs, I believe. And yeah, I think Kennedy knew a lot because he was in a relationship with Marilyn Monroe, who knew a lady called Dorothy Kilgallen, who was a journalist who was researching a UFO crash retrieval over here in Cumbria, England.
Oh.
He knew, and I don't think he wanted to keep it secret. We know he was against the CIA. He
Yeah.
wanted to to completely revolutionize the intelligence establishment. So it's no surprise to me that he was assassinated in very suspicious circumstances. Other presidents maybe know less. I've got a feeling that Bill Clinton, incidentally, actually made a statement, a public statement, that he knew nothing. He made a joke out of it. He said, "I had a letter from a little boy in Belfast called Ryan, and he asked me, 'Mr. President, are there aliens? Did we find aliens at Roswell?' And he says, 'Ryan, I can tell you now, if they did, they never told me, and I want to know.'" So he's kind of said that as a joke. He kind of repeated it when he was on the Jimmy Kimmel show a few years later.
Yeah.
I think it depends on the president. Biden knows nothing about anything, and the guy is out to lunch. It's obvious someone else is doing his job for him. I don't know about Trump. Trump will probably be the next one. I don't know how much he knows. Probably we'll have to find out, I think. We'll have to wait and see. I don't know.
Yeah, I suppose, whether you like him or not, he's the kind of guy who could find things out like that, I imagine.
I suspect he would find have he's very resourceful and intelligent, and whether he would tell the people, I hope he would. I hope he would tell the people. I don't know specifically whether he collaborate or not. I
Yeah.
expect some of them know and have gone along with the cover up, the truth embargo.
Fantastic. So, just before we wind up for the evening, I wonder if you'd like to add anything else. Is there anything we haven't talked about that you'd like to talk about?
Well, there are a million things we haven't talked about, which I could go on for ages, because I'm very much a jack of all trades, master of none.
Yeah.
And I study all I've got a broad church interest. I don't specialize as such in any one subject. But if anyone wants to find out more, you can go to my website, Hpanwo, hpanwo.blogspot.co.uk, and there you'll find a myriad of a large amount of content. Video, audio, and written about my ideas. You'll also find my fictional work, because I mean I have a fiction blog called Ben's Bookcase, which is it is panel-bb.blogspot.co.uk, and there's a link from the main Hapanmo site, which is also a portal. And some of my fiction is available for free. And there's a serial I'm writing at the moment called The Obscurati Chronicles. There's some poetry, there's some short stories. And you can also read the first three chapters of Roswell Rising for
Ooh.
free. You can read the first three chapters for nothing. It's on the website. And the reason I put them on there is because I'm pretty certain once you've read the first three chapters, you'll want to get the book. And it's £10 from
Yeah.
all good bookshops if you want a copy. And once you've read that, I hope you'll want to read the sequels, the two sequels as well. Because I think if you like this program and you're listening to this program, you'll probably like that book.
Yeah, I think I might be getting myself a copy as well.
Please do. Yeah, I'll sign it for you when I see you.
Oh,
If
thank
we ever
you.
meet, I'll sign it for you.
Oh, you'll have to let me know of all the different conferences that I'm missing out on because I'm new to this conference going.
Oh, there's loads. I mean, there's a good one coming up in April called Weird Weekend North. And it is like them all, like most of them, it is in the North Country. But it's
Yeah.
your homeland. I mean, you should be feel at home there. It's Saturday the 27th, Sunday the 28th of April, and you can get tickets from the weird. Just put Weird Weekend North into Google, and you can get tickets. This place, it's a lovely little place in Cheshire,
Yeah.
right by the Manchester Ship Canal. It's really nice.
So just out of interest, because you've got similar interests, have you heard of a podcast called Pursuit of the Paranormal?
No,
From
not that one.
they're from around the Manchester area, Ash and
Pursuit of the
Greg.
Paranormal. I may well know. I
Yeah.
may well know of them and not really listen to them in great detail because there's so much out there.
Yeah,
It's like
and
trying to
they
drink out of a fire hose. There's so
It
much.
is. Yeah, they do their own conferences as well. I just thought, with you being around the same area, you might have
I may well
bumped
know
into
them. I
each
may
other.
well have met them, and I may well have listened to a couple of their shows, but
Yeah.
forgot.
Yeah. Oh, maybe I should introduce you, because you've definitely got a lot of interest in common. So
Please
they're
do.
doing a UFO mini con in Manchester on oh no, this was last year. It was October they do their one. But yeah,
Oh,
I'll send you
all
some
right.
information.
That rings a bell. I probably will have met them and know about them. If they want me as a guest, I'd love to be a guest on their show, because I love these paranormal shows and things like that. I think they're
Yeah.
all. I take my hat off to everyone, including myself, who goes out there and puts these things on the airwaves, because
Yeah.
it's a subject I think people need to know more about.
Yeah, and I think actually people are becoming more and more interested, even, in my very normal teacher's staff room where I go, I talk about things all the time. And
Really? How
it,
good.
over the last 5 years, people have, well, if they do roll their eyes at me, they do it behind my back now. But I have opened up some really interesting conversations actually in the staff room. And historically, I think teachers have been a quite a hard sell on these sorts of subjects.
Very much so. I mean, that's excellent news, because I mean, I've heard stories a few just quite recently of like teachers getting into trouble for talking about these things in at schools and things like that. The
Oh,
parents
really?
complain, or the other
Gosh.
staff complain. Yeah, I mean, that's really good though, Michaela, because that's a
Yeah.
sign that maybe the
Things are
climate
moving
is
on.
changing. I think that, and indeed the climate has changed, and it's just so important that people know about these things. It's about our place in the universe. It's about who we are. It's about human consciousness, human life. It's about the earth and its surroundings, and how this universe works.
Yeah,
And
and
that's
that
why it's so important, this kind of
it
research.
is, and children are amazing people to talk to about it. We're currently actually in my class, we're doing our topic is space at the moment, which is my favorite time of the year. And at the end, we study all the the scientific things to start with, what makes day and night, blah blah blah. And then at the end, we have a full-blown alien day where everybody comes dressed up and people design their own aliens and design their own planets. And we just have lots and lots of chats about what the possibilities could be. And children are amazing to talk about these sorts of things too, because they don't have the preconceived ideas that adults do. And their minds are so open to possibilities. It's a joy to talk to them, actually.
That's excellent. I'm really glad that you have you have pupils who have that kind of that they're getting that kind of education. I'd love to have had a teacher like you at school, because I mean I sort of educated myself, because in my school library they had a copy of Erich von Däniken's Chariots of the Gods, which I found fascinating. I
Yeah.
borrowed that continuously, because it enthralled me, it really did.
Yeah. Well, I do have to be careful. I can't sort of say that things are things that we have to do a lot of what if and sort of exploring, but still, it's great. It's fantastic.
That's how it should be. I mean, it should be
Yeah.
all it should always be questions, and people should be allowed to question things. I mean, I'm quite happy to talk to skeptics. I've been on a couple of skeptic podcasts. I'm quite happy to defend my ideas against detractors, if they're,
Yeah.
as long as they're well behaved, and not all of them are,
Polite.
but
Yeah.
as long as they're well behaved, I'm happy to defend my ideas against detractors. If I don't have an answer for something they say, I just say I don't have an answer for that. But
Yeah.
apart from that, I'm quite happy to talk to them.
Oh, well, it's been really fantastic to talk to you, Ben. I'm really glad that you
Too.
came on the show, and I hope that you can come on again in the future and we'll
Sure.
continue our chatting.
Sure. I'm glad we could talk about lots of other subjects. So yeah, by all
Yeah.
means. By all
That's
means.
been fantastic. So just quickly again, recap and remind people where they can find you.
Hospital Porters Against the New World Order. HPANW. I just pronounce it Hapanwo.
Fantastic. I love it.
Just put that into Google, you'll find me.
That's brilliant. Well, thank you so much for your time. And I hope one day I get to chat to you in person at one of these conferences.
Hey,
And
fingers crossed, yeah.
yeah, hopefully I'll speak to you in the future. Well, that was fantastic. Thank you so much, Ben, for coming on. And don't forget to check out Ben's books and his website and his radio show. So, next week we've got lots of people who have asked to come on the show, which is fantastic. I put a call out on my Facebook page and I've managed to secure 6 interviews from it. And so we've got someone from America later this week who'll be next week's show. And then we've got the fantastic historian, Penny G. Morgan. So I'm very excited about talking to her again. And lots of other people. So it's a very exciting time for the podcast. What I really need, though, as usual, folks, is I need you to send in your true experiences. Record it on your phone and send it to me at paranormalorwhatpodcast@outlook.com. Or you can give me a phone call on 07935 100 162. That's 07935 100 162. And leave me a voicemail message telling me all about your experiences and we'll put it on the podcast. That's brilliant. So, have a spooky week and I will see you soon, or at least hear from you soon. And you take care. Don't forget to have that sip of something hot and spicy to keep away the cold winter weather. Until next week, see you later. Night.